September 1st, 2008, is the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. my dollar and a half a day. She told me to come home from sea. Lowlands, lowlands away, my John. $5 a day is white man's pay, my dollar and a half a day. Dollar and a half is black man's pay. Lowlands, lowlands, away my John. I had a dream the other night, my dollar and a half a day. I dreamed I was coming home from told me to come home from sea.
Watch from Pedro show. There we go. Start off with John Coltrane and Miles Davis, Dr. Jackal. And then we heard something from my guest here, Lowlands by Odetta, my guest for the show. Oh, by the way, I'm not in Pedro. It might be the Watch for Pedro show, but I'm actually in the Damplatz in Amsterdam, Netherlands. And my guest, Carlos van Heijten, who's not from this town either.
Nope.
But he came up to visit me. Carlos, you picked Odetta there. And song Lowlands. Why?
I saw her a couple of years ago in Amsterdam, which I was really impressed. I knew of her because I was always very into Dylan and read about her, but I didn't really know her songs or her records because they're pretty hard to get. But then I thought this is a must-see thing because I knew it's an elderly lady. So I went there, and after that I started checking out her records. And then
how long ago?
Maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. And then, there's a song called Lowlands. And Lowlands is, in a way, Holland.
Yeah,
absolutely. Pays, as they call it in French. And I used to run a festival called Lowlands, so there's a couple of reasons to start up with a song called Lowlands.
Yeah, I played it a couple of years ago. You came to that. And that's why I'm in town now. There's Stooges gig in the town where Carlos lives tomorrow. Rotterdam.
Yeah.
At a club that you put me in called Night Town, but now it's reopening and we're doing the grand reopening as Watt, W-A-T-T, which is my father's name, and I got as a gift. And I say Carlos put me there because this is how I know Carlos. He's been booking my Europe gigs for many years, maybe
more than 20 years.
21. I met him through Sonic Youth because he was booking them, still is. Maybe Evil Tour?
Sonic Youth took me on the Evil Tour in 86 and introduced me to a lot of their friends, and one of them was you. And I was in LA, 86, summer of 86.
We come over with them via Paul Smith?
Yeah. Not that much longer, but I think you came over first as Firehose on your own.
Is that
I'm
right?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Maybe it was on our own.
Yeah. I think it was first you and then. But
we toured with Sonic in US.
That's possible. Yeah.
That's
actually, on that tour, you were supposed to play. But somehow you couldn't make it.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the first Firehose gigs.
Yeah.
And we had you lined up as the opening act in San Francisco, I think. And you had to... we couldn't make it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
For whatever reason.
And then I remember the first gig of the Europe thing that you booked for us was Daventer.
Oh, yeah.
Edward.
You were kind of confused about the date.
Well, Edward was in a shower.
Yeah.
And it was too long, and we didn't make it be.
I drove to.
The gas cap. That's right. We also didn't have the key to the gas cap, and couldn't pry it off. Yeah, it was a nightmare. I had never missed a gig because you didn't make it to the airport, except
but
for that
one. Didn't you make the gig?
Not Daventer. That's the only one we missed.
Because I
the first one, we made all the rest of those
gigs. I drove to Brussels twice, I remember.
And I remember, I mean, we're talking more than 20 years ago, but we later, Firehose tour down the road did play that town.
Brussels Ace in maybe.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, we played a lot of Dutch towns.
Yeah.
It was great.
At that time, you could do easily 6-7 Dutch shows, and everybody was happy about it. We were really into, American indie music.
The scene was different. And also in those days, you would play a lot of German gigs. That's different now, too.
Yeah.
Because the Susanna.
It's more difficult now.
You know, but you come into the scene before U.S. bands are coming over. When did you get into music? You're from the Zeeland part.
I'm from the very southwest of Holland, and I grew up on a farm. First 10 years we didn't have electricity, so music was kind of not existing in record players or anything like that. But then we moved to another farm where there was the possibilities of connecting in a record player. And I got a record player when I was 14, I think. And then...
What year?
68. So I got heavy into buying and getting and whatever, vinyl. And then...
I think that's all there was.
Yeah.
Maybe cassettes
you
just
know,
came out.
No. We didn't have any cassettes. Cassettes never was really a thing being sold.
It was from a Dutch company.
Yeah, but you know, you bought pre-recorded cassettes didn't exist.
Ah.
Or they existed, but it was like a very small market. It was records, singles and albums.
No 8-track?
No.
Okay.
I knew it existed, but I've never really seen it. What I had was a reel-to-reel tape machine, and I was I got a subscription to one of those libraries where they rented out albums, and then weekly the maximum you could get was 3, and then weekly I went there on my moped, and I got my 3 new records every week, and that was like a whole discovery thing because you listen to the radio, but it was. You know, going to that place and having hundreds of records around you and through friends, you sort of had a clue where to look for and what to look for. I discovered quite a bit of stuff.
What was Dutch radio in 68 like?
It was pirate stations, were a bunch of them. And then official
was
radio...
Was that good music?
It was, yeah. It wasn't bad, but it was like... They didn't play Models of Invention or Captain Beefheart. Or,
no.
You know, if you passed the Stones and the Beatles and the Small Faces and the Kings and da-da-da, you sort of... There's no radio station catering you. And I was into Stones, I was into Beatles and that kind of stuff, but, you know, Soft Machine, Pink Floyd, Zappa, that kind of things.
What was the Dutch radio? I mean, the legal.
There was, you know,
was
there was VPRO at that time,
yeah.
too. And so they had some stuff. And there was TV stuff, too. I remember seeing Dr. John and Zappa on Dutch TV, like mid-60s. And, you know, it was like, wow, what's going on here? You know, Dutch TV makers were pretty on the case at that time.
Hilversum?
Hilversum is VPRO, Hilversum, all radio and TV is based in Hilversum.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's still, you know, if you look around, there's some really cool 60s documentaries on American underground music made by Dutch people. Roelof Kiers, I think, is one of his names, but there's a couple of more. Who made some real cool documentaries.
Yeah, I know jazz people got to be on TV early.
Yeah.
Big time. I got to meet Han Bennick in Tokyo and get to play with him.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. He's been around for a long time.
He played with Eric Dolphy.
Yeah.
All
these guys came in the 50s, they came to Europe.
It was kind of closed-minded for them in US.
Yeah.
It was more open here.
Yeah, right? Like Copenhagen had a jazz thing, Amsterdam had one, Paris.
Stockholm.
Yeah. And some of those people stayed here for
you can tell by the records, the recordings. Yeah. Wow, these guys were recording. So you're listening to records, three new vinyls a week.
Yeah, and you know, like I finished school and da 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 da. But then at some, just after finishing school, someone asked me if I was into running a record store, and it was like, wow.
How does that happen?
You know, you go to
a record store. Where you start?
No. You go to the record store like 4 or 5 times a week.
Yeah.
And then they say,
okay. What are the cats working there?
Yeah, and then they open another store in Eindhoven, where I eventually moved to. But I was living in Breda, and. They opened a store in Eindhoven. They were looking for someone to run it. And, you know, said, like, of course I want to do this.
Like, you must be into records. You're in here all the time.
Yeah. And then it was, you know, it was kind of depressing because I got this job and there was nothing. So I had to stock the record store. And, you know, I thought I knew a lot about music, but then stocking a record store means that you have to go all the way from left to right.
And yeah, to sell records.
No, also to buy records. I had to go to these wholesale.
Yeah, I mean, you got to sell them. You got to have a choice for people who might not listen to stuff that you listen to.
So like, hard to maybe I had like 200 artists like 500 artists I was interested in, but we needed to stock like 2,000 artists.
Yeah.
And some of them were interesting, but, you know, I had no clue what I was. So I went to this store, like a warehouse, and I had to pick all these records.
How old were you?
I was mid-20s, early-20s, mid-20s. I was 78, so...
So 10 years after your 24. First record player.
Yeah.
Okay. You're running a store.
And I was, you know, that's really intense. It was 78. Uh-huh. I did this from 78 to 71. And I 81, sorry. And I think if you look back, like, every week there was a 7-inch coming out. We still consider as being a classic.
Oh yeah.
That was like
that
amazing
time.
Times for music. It's like all the punk rock things, but also the Cure, Bunny Man, everything started. A pop group, Gang of Four. I remember one of my things is like I started the record store when the first magazine album came out.
Yeah.
And I closed. I bowed out when the last magazine album was released. So. That was my career.
I read somewhere Barry Adamson just put out a new record.
Yeah.
He was the bass player, right?
Yeah.
Magazine was a band where the singer Buzzcocks, Howard Devoto, went and made.
Yeah, he lost only one.
You should play some of that then.
Yeah, I have it.
You have it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's play some of that.
Came up from nowhere, and I'm going Seldom. Ba-dum.
Naked as sin, an army towel covering my belly. Some of us blush, somehow knees turning to jelly. Next, I was still just a kid. There were 100 like me. I followed a naked body. A naked body followed me. Next, I was still just a kid when my innocence was lost. In a mobile army whorehouse, gift of the army, free of cost. Next, you're next. Me, I really would have liked a little touch of tenderness, maybe a word, just a smile, some instant happiness. But no, next. Oh, it wasn't so tragic. The high heavens didn't fall, but how much of that time I hated being there at all. Next. Now I always will recall the brothel truck, the flying flags, the queer lieutenant who slapped our asses as if we were fags. Next, your next. I swear on the wet head of my first case of gonorrhea, it's his ugly voice that I forever hear. Next. That voice that stinks of corpses, of whiskey and of mud. It is the voice of the nations, that thick voice of blood. Next. And since then, each woman I've taken to bed seems to laugh in my arms and a whisper through my head. Next. All the naked and the dead should hold each other's hands as they watch me scream at night in a dream no one can understand. Next. And when I'm not screaming in a voice grown dry and hollow, I stand on endless naked lines of the following and the followed. Next. One day I'll cut my legs off and burn myself alive. Anything, I'll do anything to get out of line just to survive. I'm never to be next. Oh, never to be next. Next.
from Pedro show. That was Scott Walker with Next. Before that, we had Boredom by the Buzzcocks. No, we didn't. We had Shot by Both Sides by Magazine. And before that, we had Boredom by the Buzzcocks. To tell you a little bit about some of the music Carlos was hearing when he's running the store. What was the name?
Bullet.
Bullet, there in Eindhoven.
Yeah.
And I played there a few times. There was a club called FNAR.
Yeah. So I did the record store from 78 to 81. And then the FNR asked me if I was interested in promoting the shows there. And
was it Rene then?
No. Okay. He was not way after me, but he was after me. And so I took the job because it was a job. It's not like someone as a private person promotes shows there. You're sort of in-house promoter for the venue. And that was a wonderful time because I did it for 5 years. I got to meet a lot of people, and I could do one or two gigs a week with my favorite artists.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people. I got to meet them, and I got great gigs there.
Well, back to the record store Bullet. Did you ever have bands come in to do in stores?
No. No.
So you never got to meet any...
No, you know, in the record store, there's people who came by, but it wasn't like... That didn't exist. It was a tiny record store.
In those
store.
Days, that didn't happen like that. But what you did do was get to hear stuff being made in the moment.
Yeah.
Which was kind of great.
Yeah, you know...
To set you up for that gig at the FNAR, because then you'd know who to book. There's so many promoter people that get into it, they're clueless. They have no idea. But you'd be in, 3 years...
The record store is like the university.
Right. It's like crossroads of a lot of information.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people come in there and tell you about all kinds of music. Yeah. And, you know, I had my little narrow road, and then it became like huge. You know, like people, like the pop group comes in, and then the No New York record came out. And then a lot of people sort of went into that direction of James Johns and all these people. And, you know, I had no clue, but I was very interested and I wanted to know all about it. And then... you know, you got to hear them, you went to gigs, you know, there was like, you had a car, so like, anywhere you could go and see a show, you went. And so, any band, you know, like James Johns, but also, you know, we went to see the Sex Pistols was before that, but this was, I've seen tons of great gigs there, like.
Yeah, the Eindhoven is in like the northeast.
No.
Southeast corner, I'm sorry. Southeast corner of Holland. And in fact, we were at the Van Gogh Museum today, and these little farm towns came together to make that area, right?
It was because of Philips, you know. It was all kinds of little farm towns, but all of a sudden Philips started there as a company, and the little towns all, you know, grew together because of all people moving there to work in factories.
Right. Before that, there's kind of a poor kind of farming thing, and this is the land that Vincent van Gogh comes from and first starts painting.
Yeah.
And that's interesting seeing this stuff.
It was pretty, because the agriculture was a very poor kind of agriculture because of the soil.
Right.
And then because of the industry, all of a sudden it's booming. And then it also got, because of the Philips thing, it got a technical university.
Right.
And it's, you know, it built up to something really great.
A lot different in Vincent's days.
Yeah. And it was also, in a kind of way, it's pretty central because it's fairly central to the Ruhrgebiet, like Aachen and Düsseldorf in Germany, Antwerp and Brussels in Belgium, and Amsterdam and Rotterdam in Holland. And it's all like an hour and a half driving from Eindhoven.
Right.
So a lot of people from those areas came to Eindhoven. And for some reason, because whatever, a lot of musicians at some point loved to come to Eindhoven. And same as for Groningen, people like to hang out in Groningen. And Amsterdam is always a little bit arrogant and always a bit, you know, too much of a big city. And in places like Eindhoven and Groningen, people took care more. They took more time for you, you know.
Right.
Because it wasn't the band next day. It was, you know, you were the only band that week, and there was only one venue. So you were the friends of that week.
Speaking of which, we played some Scott Walker.
Yeah.
That's not so maybe widely known or commercial.
No.
You know about it.
I don't know that much about it, but I remember friends of mine back in Zeeland who were huge Scott Walker fans, and I didn't really have a clue what it was all about. But then you know, you like with all these things, you sort of read about it, and then you sort of, the right people talk about that kind of stuff.
You get turned on.
You wanna know more about it.
Yeah.
And I sort of felt I kept track of him, and in, you know, his newer albums are dark events, and he's still interesting. He's still very interesting. And also,
I didn't know he curated a Meltdown.
He did. Yeah.
What kind of bands Mr. O'Rourke played?
Good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't have a good answer.
Meltdown's like a thing in England where a cat gets picked to curate and pick the band. Sort of like Tomorrow's Party does that too. So you get kind of a perspective of a artist by these bands.
His taste. And they also try to put something special together. They like to have people making combinations.
Right.
You know,
right.
Or you know, people bringing a special project. I think those are the people who sort of got Smile on the road.
Right.
I think that's the kind of thing. And like I told you before today, is like they got Kevin Shields to do Coral Sea with Patti Smith. You know, that kind of stuff they're really into. And it's something ATP is not, you know, that keen on. They probably would like to have it happen, but it's more a Meltdown thing.
Okay. Yeah, how old is the Meltdown thing? It's not that old, is it?
No, it might be 10 years.
Oh, really?
And it's, you know, it's pretty highbrow. I think they had Lou Reed do one, and they had Costello do one.
It's part of some kind of arts thing, I think.
It's the South Bank. Okay. And it's on the South Bank, and it's a very prestigious concert venue. Mm-hmm. It's like Royal Festival Hall. There's some prestigious gigs who've been there. And
I played there with the Stooges.
Hendrix played there.
The guy who asked us was, you said his name earlier.
Yeah, it's Glenn Max.
The tall man with the
glasses. Oh, yeah, it's Jarvis Cocker.
Jarvis, yeah. He said some nice things about the Stooges. And then we played this thing, and it was kind of, it's an awkward venue in a way. The seats are right up in front of you at an angle, and I was kind of self-conscious a little bit. I just looked at Iggy most of the time.
No, but it's, you know, it's
Did you remember that Lowlands gig? It's the only gig when Iggy knocked me down.
Yeah, so it was a very good one.
First moment I didn't look, and I was on the deck. I didn't quit playing.
Yeah. No, it was, you know, all the reviews of that show were really, really good. And it's because he did last year, I think. Wasn't it last year? And, you know, they were kind of late on hooking up with the Stooges because you guys were doing this already for a couple of years.
Yeah, it's 5 years and 5 months.
And this year they sort of decided, okay, that worked last year. Let's get a new thing. And they got the Sex Pistols. And it was like really bad. You know, the reviews on that one was really, really down all the way.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it wasn't fun at all. Did you see them since they
I haven't seen them. You know, once I was on Steve Jones's show, mm-hmm. He seemed like a very interesting man. And, you know, God, we know about public image and stuff. Yeah. But maybe...
Maybe you should play public image now.
Yeah. You didn't see it, though. You just heard about it.
I don't want to... I saw the Sex Pistols in 77.
Yeah,
but
so
I don't want
to. You don't want to see him again.
Yeah.
Now, at the FNAR, how many years?
Five.
5 years. In those 5 years, do you have a favorite gig that you put on? Most proud that you brought to town?
You know, it's a long time ago, but, you know, the birthday party, that was an Einstürzende Neubauten on their first album. Those were events. Virgin Prunes. When they were very early on, Butthole Surfers, when they first came by.
Did you hear about Gibby? And, you know, they did a reunion tour.
Yeah, they just went to Amsterdam.
They were in New York. I guess the Ritz is called Webster's Hall now. You never played, were at the old Ritz?
I don't
know. That used to be like the big pad for punk gigs in the 80s, late 80s. Maybe middle 80s. Yeah, middle. Minute.
I probably have played it.
But anyway, they were just playing there, and something happened with the sound man, monitor man, and Gibby. And Gibby got thrown off the gig.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fucked. So, man, I think he was just escorted.
I've they've been playing a festival in Holland.
Yeah.
When they were thrown out of the building, but you know they got so wasted. It was like.
Oh.
It was mid-80s when they first came by. They were an event. You know, you've seen them in
the 80s. Their first Hollywood gig was playing with Minutemen.
Yeah.
It was them, us, and the Big Boys. Mm-hmm. At a place called Grandia Room.
And Big Boys drummer went on to play Scratch Acid.
Yeah.
Ray Washam.
And maybe some other bands too.
Could be.
What's that guy? The New Wave guy. Ministry. Wasn't he in that?
Yeah, yeah. Ray went to play with Ministry.
Yeah. And I think he's living in LA now. Good drummer.
Yeah.
Good guy.
I haven't seen him since.
You know what, though? At that time, maybe Ray was in the band then, but I remember the Buttholes had a guy on drum named...
On drums?
Yeah, they had a drummer. They had a drum.
They didn't have Teresa
and King yet. No, they had a guy on Trap Kit. They had some kid named Eskimo on bass. And Paul sang half the songs. Gibby played a lot of sax.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was different.
That's before.
This is before they had the record out on Jello's label.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Yeah.
Also, Minutemen played with them at a place called Perkins Palace, where it was only time. I think Minutemen only played with two England bands. One was Public Image, and one was this Sex Gang Children. Do you remember this band? It was very hard to play with England bands at that time.
But Public Image was Joe Ogle and Martin Atkins?
It was, yeah. Martin Atkins was the drummer. I wonder if it was Joe Wobble.
Wobble was in it longer than Martin Atkins, I think.
Yeah, but I don't know. I can't remember. God, why don't I remember? I remember Martin Atkins was in the band, though, because we were talking with him.
Hmm.
When we saw them, when they first came and played, it was those guys.
Okay.
And Levine.
I've never seen them.
But, yeah, we saw the first one. But then when we played with them three times. I remember there was this funny gig at the Stone in San Francisco. And we're, like, into the second song. Now, Minutemen had very small songs.
Yeah.
It's the second song, and I look over the side of the stage, and it's like, pointing at his watch. We're going to get off quick. In fact, one of the gigs we got off, we got to be able to set up and tear down really quick, so there's whatever manager was so impressed, he asked us to do a world tour with him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're talking about Public Image then?
Yeah.
Yeah? Wow.
Because we had to do a gig, I remember when we played with him in Sacramento, we had another gig in San Francisco that night, so we got to step up and out. And
I doubt if they ever did a world tour. I think the U.S. was, and maybe a couple of UK shows, no, that's...
Well, maybe that was the world of it.
Yeah, but you know,
I remember D. Boone seeing. Yeah, but this is early Minutemen. I remember D. Boone, us finding. We didn't know about big gigs and stuff. And there was a table with a bunch of sandwiches. I guess it was their chow, their catering. We didn't know D. Boone, like, a bunch of sandwiches and his chow. And the guy came in through this boot and we ran to the boat and drove off. It was a trip. So, those were your favorite bands. But was there U.S. bands coming over yet?
It was starting. It was like... No, there were definitely people coming over. Buttle Service was a U.S. band.
Right.
And
but maybe not till 84?
No, I remember... Yeah. But the first... Sonic Youth was definitely one of the first ones. But I remember Live Skull also as being one of the first ones. They had one guy coming over to Europe and getting one of those train passes. And he traveled all around Europe with a notepad. And he visited all the people he got phone numbers from. And he booked his own tour just by traveling around Europe on a train. And then, like, he got his friends over at the end of his train trip. And they did the tour. And sort of, you know, Sonic Youth did kind of a similar thing.
That's the Live Skull before Italia.
Yeah,
we played with them. They were just four people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was another Sonic girl. Youth. There was a girl in it.
Yeah.
On bass.
Right.
And it was Mark C. I don't know their names anymore. But it was like
one guy named was Tom, I think.
Yeah. Tom.
It was one of the guitarists.
Yeah.
I remember I know them, but it was a long time ago. So they were on the first in Sonics, of course.
Yeah, and Sonics were...
How did they come on over? They were brought by somebody?
It was...
Because this is the first time you meet them, right?
The first time... No, I knew Lee from before that.
Branca?
No, before that. He was... I was living in Eindhoven with a girl, a roommate of mine, and she was a singer. and she, her name was Truce, and she wanted to go abroad because Holland is so tiny, and so she went to New York and started the band there. And basically she brought this band back to Eindhoven because she has sort of a reputation in Eindhoven and in Holland, and so she made little tours in Holland. And one of the people in one of her first lineups was Lee Ronaldo, together with David Linden. So, and then they stayed in our house.
What was that band called?
Plus Instruments.
That's right, Plus Instruments. They told
and they,
me about
they
that.
Recorded, they made an album, and we put out the album. We were a record label at that time.
So the Star Bullet also had a label.
Me and
separate
friend,
from both. Those.
Yeah, me and a friend had a record label called Kremlin.
Kremlin. Oh, yeah, you've told me about that.
Yeah, my friend Tom and we put out the first Plus Instruments record.
And that's in?
Eindhoven. In 81, I think.
In 81.
Or 82.
So right when you start working at FNAR, you start putting out your own label too.
And then, so that's how I hooked up with Lee. And then, I think 2 years later, he came by and was playing in Branka's band. And I went to see that show, and he said, "Oh, by the way, I started the band, and we are gonna do some gigs in Europe at the end of this tour. Can we play your venue in 3 weeks' time?" So I said, "Yeah, why not?" You know. And then so that was
at that time with Branka. Is he with Thurston?
I think it was with Thurston. Yeah.
Because I think he's with Branka before Thurston.
I'm not sure if it was with.
Well, Thurston was Kim kind of got him into
it. Yeah, but I think that was the second tour of Branka.
Okay.
It was the first time I saw Branka was at the Apollo House in Eindhoven, and that was just Lee. But then the next time, it was a bigger band. They played a more prestigious venue, and I think they even didn't do the guitars, but they did like the weird boxes and strings. And I think Thurston was in that band. And maybe Kim was connected to it as well. I don't know.
Well, there was something about her getting thirsty in or something.
Okay.
He's telling me. Don't quote me because my memory's so faulty. But that's how they get together in the band, Sonic Youth Band.
And so then they said, okay, why don't you, you know, they played my venue. And then the FNR. And they said.
Is that the first time you see Sonic?
Yeah.
And that's their first Europe tour?
Yeah.
And who's the drummer at that first one?
Bob.
Bob was the drummer then already. All right.
Yeah. And the coincidence was that Truce, the lady I talked to you before,
the
next Plus Instruments lineup had Jim Sclavounos in it, who she eventually married to. So,
That's true.
That's,
everything connected. What was that first Sonic Youth gig like?
I loved it. And in a way also because they had it like they were like above all nice people, and they had sense of humor, and the music was like falling apart and being very rough and very, but it had some kind of friendliness to it that sort of was very
How'd you compare it to now?
There's a big difference. It's rudimentary, and it's like they I don't want to say they barely could play their instruments, but it was very basic, and it was very like also there were very good gigs, but there were really bad ones too. Things fell apart sometimes.
So I'm talking about that first FNR one.
Yeah, that didn't fall apart. It was a really like exciting. It was very like something is happening.
That's in 83.
Yeah.
Because I know their first tours were Europe ones. Before they really started.
Yeah, Lee keeps telling me that, like, the first thing they got going was here. And
no, because I remember we were touring around, and they weren't really on the scene yet.
Uh-huh.
But if you did read in England, Sounds, or...
And me.
The Melody Maker, they would be talking about Sonic Youth.
Yeah.
That's kind of how we heard. We didn't know the band yet, really. And they started coming around. Well, they'd become an SST fan.
Yeah, but that was they first had their Paul Smith thing.
Yeah, they come and I seen them at the Anticlub.
But before that, they had like a Berlin label putting out Confusion.
Right, but that's still I think they're touring in Europe. They're not touring U.S. yet, really.
Yeah.
they come to U.S. and play the Anti-Club.
But the first thing they did in the U.S., I think, was like playing with the Swans. They did a tour.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. In fact, he was, I think Michael's from California originally.
Yeah, he's what
he had something called the Crippled IDs or something. He had a band at the Second Mask. He actually had a band before Swans.
Yeah, but it wasn't Crippled IDs. There was...
Was it something like that? It had a weird-ass name.
It had a weird name, but it wasn't like that.
Cripple IDs?
No.
You sure?
We couldn't look it up.
Yeah, he had some kind of tricky ass name.
Yeah, I remember.
It wasn't that big in the scene, but he did do some gigs.
Yes.
In fact, I think he's from up the hill.
Yeah.
From Pedro, Palos Verdes. Something like that.
Yeah, you know that area better than I do, but...
I don't know it that well. It's up the hill.
he's one of the first people who... the other people I started bringing over.
Really?
Yeah. Like Swans. And then because I became friends with Sonic Youth, they said, I toured with them in Europe a couple of times. And then they said, why don't you come over to the States and be with us?
That's when you do the Evil Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sister Tour.
Sister. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Sister. Evil Tour was before that. I saw that when Kim and her mom and pops, it was at the Roxy, I think, and they sat and watched it.
That was the tour I was on.
Is that then you show that sister?
Yeah. You know, I was there and we stayed at her parents'
house. Her parents' house, because
so I'm not sure
I remember.
They came. It was at the Roxy. I remember that.
They came, they sat at a table, because I remember First and Cousin and shit right in front of them.
Yeah?
It was part of the songs.
Yeah.
But then they played it again, and Mudhoney opened.
No, the one time I remember wasn't when. I remember you came on stage. You played the song along
Star Power.
And, Mudhoney, I don't
know. No, but that's another tour after. Okay. That's the first time I saw Mudhoney. I'm pretty sure, but I'm not totally.
I think, retarded. I kind of feel Mudhoney is like 88, 89.
No, see, that's a couple. Yeah. Maybe the next tour, or two tours after, but they play the Roxy again. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I saw him. And for some reason, I thought Mudhoney was a lot like them, which was kind of hard for me to.
This is the book. Talking about to you. This is the picture.
That's it.
That's the day.
Look at the hair.
That's cool.
Way darker. That's the day or the night.
That's the night we met.
Yeah, yeah. And there's Lee in the.
Yeah,
I think.
And this Thurston.
Right, but this is Lee holding the camera, yeah. Huh?
And this is. Lee told me this is the guy you played with before. Before Minutemen, or first edition of Minutemen.
That's Martin.
I don't know him.
Yeah, that's Martin. Martin, we had a band before the Minutemen called The Reactionaries. Mm-hmm. And it's us three, Georgie, DeBoom, myself. But there was this fourth man named Martin Timberovich.
Mm-hmm.
Very sad. A few years ago, he got a rash and this flesh-eating bacteria and killed him in a couple days.
Wow. Really?
It's terrible. Wow, that sounds horrible. Yeah, maybe 5 years. He was only 45 years old.
Yeah.
You never lived before, and I said, you only see me need.
So the two songs we just heard was...
No, it was three. Carrots.
Three songs, sorry. Public Image by Public Image. I'm the Urban Spaceman by the Bonzo Dog Duda Band. And Young Man Blues by The Who.
Live one off...
Live at Leeds.
Live at Leeds.
Great album.
And that brings us to the end of the first hour of the September 1st, 2008 edition of Watt from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. September 1st, 2008. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Durch ein kleines Lied deutet Polly ihre Verheiratung mit dem Räuber McKees an.
Einst glaubte ich, als ich noch unschuldig war, und das war ich einst grad so wie du. Gewiss kommt auch zu mir einmal einer, und dann muss ich wissen, was ich tu. Und wenn er Geld hat, und wenn er nett ist, und sein Kragen ist auch werktags rein. Und wenn er weiß, was sich bei einer Dame schickt, dann sage ich ihm nein. Da behält man seinen Kopf oben und man bleibt ganz allgemein. Sicher scheint der Mond die ganze Nacht, sicher ist das Boot am Ufer losgemacht, aber weiter kann nicht sein. Ja, da kann man sich doch nicht nur hinlegen. Ja, da muss man kalt und herzlos sein. Ja, da könnte doch viel geschehen. Ja, da geht überhaupt nur nein. Der erste, der kam, war ein Mann aus Kent. Der war, wie ein Mann sein soll. Der zweite, der hatte drei Schiffe im Hafen. Der dritte, der war nach mir toll. Und als sie Geld hatten, und als sie nett waren, und ihr Kragen war auch werktags rein. Und als sie wussten, was sich bei einer Dame schickt, da sagte ich ihnen nein. Da behielt ich meinen Kopf oben und ich blieb ganz allgemein. Sicher schien der Mond die ganze Nacht, sicher war das Boot am Ufer losgemacht, aber weiter konnte nichts sein. Ja, da kann man sich doch nicht einfach hinlegen. Ja, da muss ich kalt und herzlos sein. Ja, da könnte doch viel geschehen. Ja, da gab's überhaupt nur nein. Nein. Jedoch eines Tags, und der Tag, der war blau, kam einer, der mich nicht bat. Und er hängte seinen Hut an den Nagel in meiner Kammer, und ich wusste nicht mehr, was ich tat. Und als er kein Geld hatte, und als er nicht nett war, und sein Kragen war auch am Sonntag nicht rein. Und als er nicht wusste, was sich bei einer Dame schickt, zu ihm sagte ich nicht nein. Da behielt ich meinen Kopf nicht oben und blieb nicht allgemein. Ach, es schien der Mond die ganze Nacht. Ach, es war das Boot am Ufer losgemacht. Und es konnte gar nicht anders sein. Ja, da muss ich mich doch einfach hinlegen. Ja, da konnte ich doch nicht kalt und herzlos sein. Ja, da musste es doch geschehen.
slightly out of tune, but I'm sure I'm not to blame. Nothing's happened, but I think it will soon, so I sit here waiting for God in a train to the astral plane. Magic rings I made have turned my finger green, and my mystic roses died. Guess reality is not as it seems, so I sit here hoping for truth and a ride to the other side. Stole the only light I knew, and the darkness softly screamed. Holy visions disappeared from my view, but the angels come back and laugh in my dreams. I wonder what it means. Thank you.
this was three songs.
We started out the second hour.
Yeah. Chosen by me, it was Lotte Lenya and Kurt Weill. Their song, Von Nein und Ja. And Judicial Crayon, Angel. And my friend Sonic Youth with Shadow of a Doubt.
Right, off the Evil album.
Yeah.
You know, I was there for some of the recording. Mm-hmm. They brought me in. I'm on one of the songs.
Did you record it in
something in the kingdom? It's got numbers in its name.
Okay.
I can't remember.
Kingdom,
you know,
number
I'm talking
one,
about.
Maybe.
No, it's in the kingdom number 13 and 14, almost like a Rainy Day Woman.
Okay.
No, it was recorded in Brooklyn at a guy named Martin Beesy's studio,
yeah,
called Beesy. It was the strangest studio I'd ever been in, because the control room where he had his mixing board was where they recorded.
Yeah.
It was in two separate rooms. And I recorded that song and then a Kim Fowley cover.
Bubblegum.
Yeah. Which was really trippy because it was only me and Steve playing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're playing to the record.
Yeah.
By Kim Fowley.
Yeah.
And then later on, they removed Kim Fowley and Lee and Thurston.
Yeah. That's cool.
To record on it.
And was the Whitey album around the same time?
I think a little after.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, at the same time was actually the Chicone
Evil
single.
Yeah,
this is Evil. So I do that first with them.
Yeah.
And then it's actually the first recording I do after D. Boone's killed and the Minuteman Ants. So I took Kira to Yale in Connecticut. And on the way back, I stop in New York City. And they bring me into the studio to do that. And because I really didn't think people wanted to hear me play bass for that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I played Kim's bass. It was this weird ovation that was kind of beat up.
Mm-hmm.
The neck was cracked. I remember certain notes would make it vibrate and pinch the skin in your palm. And so I said to him, wow, that was kind of neat to play with you. So why don't we do a thing where I'll play a Madonna song and you play a Madonna song. And Thurston named it Chicone Youth.
Yeah.
So I went back home and made this burning up thing in my apartment and sent it to Thurston, and he got his band to send us into the groove. And it also had a little rap, Tough Titty rap.
Yeah.
So it was like two songs. And I could hear the rap. I think they did it the same way where they play to the record, because you can hear Madonna start singing with him a little bit. But they take that demo thing, I said, I went and when they liked that, I said, okay, now I'll go record one with Greg Ginn on lead guitar, and I'll play all the other stuff. Ethan James recorded and programmed drum machine. All I used was a Radio Shack drum thing, just doing one thing. I didn't know how to program. I don't think you could that machine, but Ethan James had a Lynn drum, which was kind of Sophisto in those times. Well, they told me about them wanting to do this version of the Beatles' White Album.
Mm-hmm.
But that has a lot of songs to learn shit or record alongside, so it don't happen. They do these kind of tricks. After Jay was on a couple songs, and they took that little show'em version, demo, I guess you call it, kind of. They used that on the album.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't really part of
It's
called Chicone Youth, the Whitey album, but it's not really the same as the Chicone Youth, I'm on one side, you're on the other side.
Okay.
That was more of an idea. We even took a picture. I guess there was a Chicone Youth band.
Yeah, no, that's
photo.
What I was. I remember.
And we're on tour.
That was on the 86 tour.
And part of it is in that's with Firehose. We're playing in some gig in Pennsylvania. I remember it's on a highway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're in, there's the dressing room and the picture's taking.
I don't know. The one picture where you're sitting
on the couch.
No,
there's another one where we're in the field.
Yeah.
With the flowers and shit.
Yeah.
But we're actually, first I think we're in the couch in this dressing room of this this gig. It was a weird club. It wasn't in Philadelphia proper.
Mm-hmm.
It was outside of town, a little west. That's what I remember. I recall anyway. But it was never really a band.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And the Whitey album was, I wasn't involved with it all, except for this sending them that tape that I never thought was going to be used. I had to whisper because my neighbors and stuff, you know, I'm in an apartment. Later on, they put it out again.
the album?
On CD, yeah. And they had me write the liner notes. So okay. That's how I'm involved with the Whitey Chicone, album.
Yeah.
Chicone Youth.
Chicone
Youth, the single, came out on New Alliance, but then Paul Smith puts it out as a 12-inch mm-hmm. in England. Kim did the cover. She made some kind of like newspaper headline.
No. It's Bob Burt.
Bob Burt did that?
It's like, I think he was like
I think Kim told me she did it.
I think it was like a headline.
Bobby is in the band, but Steve's in the band by this time.
I know, but Bob was involved in the printing of the whole thing. I think there was Bob was working at Warhol's.
Well, no, I put it out. Maybe he's in charge of making that artwork?
Yeah.
I thought Kim did. It had some headline about Castro. It was a bunch of fake headlines. And then Madonna's picture of his on it. Yeah. Sean Penn or something.
Somehow I have a silk screen of that image. And what I remember was that Bob Burt was working at Warhol's printing studio at that time. And he got that like in his spare time done. But I'm not sure how it all came together. That's, you know, I have...
Like, I asked Kim. Kimmy and no. Because I thought, remember her telling me that she put the cover together. I think she's listed as the credit on
could
the
be,
New Alliance
could be. Maybe Bob just did that, like the printing stuff. Or, you know, I don't know.
I got the thing and I printed up the covers for the Savage. I don't know what, maybe for Paul Smith. Man, that was a 12-inch.
Yeah, I'm talking
and
about
And also I had a different, I gave him some comic book drawing for the back. Something about a lady with a candle burning.
Like in the circle?
Yeah. That ain't on the 7-inch.
I don't know.
That's on the one that... Well, the 7-inch is first, and that's a U.S. Okay. one. Then Paul Smith, who I saw again, he's working with Prom and Gristle a couple years ago.
He's
that's
still
good
nice.
To see him.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah, he's doing, you know, Prom and Gristle and Suicide. Those are his main projects.
Suicide's back? Wow.
You know, he does suicide projects. He just released an album, no, a single. He has a series of singles of other people doing suicide songs. And he just released Bruce Springsteen doing a suicide song. And he had Lydia doing a suicide song.
Wow, I like Suicide.
There's
a song called Frankie Teardrop.
Yeah.
Whew. Heavy ass song.
Isn't that a long, very long song?
Yeah, but it's creepy. Way singing and that little, they were so Econo, little keyboard and those sunglasses.
They were a weird bunch of people.
Oh, I can imagine. Maybe New York people, I think. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's all, you know, it's.
I like them a lot. Well, anyway, I heard about it. Oops, I heard his name again because a couple of days ago, Stooges played in Berlin. And the day before, we get into town, and Jay Maskus' brother-in-law, Philly, is making a documentary on him and asked me to do spiel for it. Actually, I was the first guy to spiel on it 4 years ago, and it's still in the making. Then I also, a buddy of his named Tony, is making a documentary on Mark Stewart, mm-hmm. who is a singer of the pop group, who I got to meet a few years ago playing at a festival. The same bill as Mafia. It's been with Doug Wimbush, Keith LeBlanc, Skip McDonald, and he wanted me to talk about Pod Group, and I was happy to. And then Mark Stewart came by. He's living in Berlin part time now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he said he had to go. His son was doing music in Spain or something, was there in town, and I had to go see him. And I gotta go. But he's hung around and. The whole time, and I talked to him like 6-7 hours.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And to Mark or to Philly?
Philly was there, but it was mainly with
Mark. Wow.
And it was an incredible experience for me. I got to talk to him maybe an hour altogether at that Weska gig in Catalan a few years ago. This, I really got to spiel. He's an incredibly smart and funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I fixed it up so he could meet Iggy after the Berlin show and talk to him. He wanted to thank him for inspiration and all this, since he felt it was weird just people saying they got inspired by him, Nick Cave and such. But he got to ask Iggy some stuff too about some music happening in Detroit and when the Stooges were young. But Mark, man, Yeah, me and T. Boone could not imagine he would be like that, you know?
They were an interesting bunch of people.
Did you get to see him play?
Yeah, I saw the pop group, and I saw Rip Rick and Panic.
He said that was difficult for him because he said that was the music they were in that band. Yeah. Because then that's why, because it spun off, because they were trying to... he said at the beginning they were teenagers and we didn't really know how to play. And so that weird time stuff was by accident.
Yeah.
But then when they could learn how to play and they were trying to play weird time on purpose, he said it was too hard for him to sing over. So they split off into different bands. And Rip Grand Panic was one of them.
Yeah. And I saw the piano player playing like a classical.
Springer?
Yeah. A couple of years later, which was really beautiful also. But, you know, and Rip Rick and Panic became, what's her?
The girl? Don Cherry's daughter, Nina Cherry.
Yeah, Nina Cherry was in it for a while.
She was really young, right?
Yeah. She was like a late teenager when she was joining those people.
Yeah.
And Mark, I saw him a bunch of times with the Mafia and with... what's his name? The sound guy?
Adrian Sherwood. He was great. It's like he's in the band.
Yeah.
He's jamming on the
controls. Intense.
Yeah, very good, active. I've never seen a sound man so active with the band. Like he was playing right
along. Yeah, but he got it all from the reggae people. When the reggae people came to Europe first, they brought their own... The producers, like Lee Scratch Perry was behind the soundboard when they first
told me about just working with him.
What is it? Mark?
Mark Stewart said he's just working with him. Yeah. For me, you know, it was kind of strange in a way because big influence on us. So he must say stupid shit, you know?
Why? At that time, and no, nowadays you sort of, that's behind you.
Well, it was going to come out anyway, I guess. Yeah. I was so stumbling on myself. There was a point when I meant to say George Orwell, and I said Orson Welles. Then I remembered a quote of Orson Welles was, I have a very unfortunate personality.
Yeah.
You don't know that.
No.
You don't have the command on English.
No.
Yeah, that's kind of tricky to say, but it's kind of heavy. I confused this thing, so I was still worried about it. Sometimes I'm very worried about speaking, like most of the times, because that stupid shit's going to come out of my mouth. Uh-huh. And with somebody like that who I really held in high esteem. But he is he made me feel at ease. He tells a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
And laughs at them all. Mm-hmm. You got a big laugh. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was a trip. I'd never imagined... He's got kind of eyebrows like the Thunderbirds.
Uh-huh.
You remember them puppets?
Yeah. No, I can. You know, I haven't seen him for at least 10 years, but
oh man, he is a great cat.
He's like a huge guy.
Tall man, big man. That blew my mind too. Yeah. The whole thing about him.
He's in the book.
Is he in the book?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. When does the period of the book start?
It's like mid-70s to...
Okay, so ground we covered. Yeah. Well, getting back to where we covered, now you did 5 years at the FNR.
Yeah. And then...
Well, how's that work out, right? You can do 5 years and that's about it?
Yeah. You sort of, you did your thing. It's like, it's not only about music, but it's like the whole place is run for... You know, it's all kinds of kids growing up there. It's not right. Like an empty box with a band or bands and audience. It's like it's a whole community. You're sort of a center, except next to the record store, you're the sort of the hangout for
social.
It's a very social thing. And then you run into the social thing. Also, gives you a lot of joy, but gives you like, you know. Part of it was skinheads, for instance, or like people you don't want to hang out with all the time. And so after 5 years, it was time to move on. And the Sonic Youth proposal of bringing me to the States for a tour managing their 86 tour was a nice...
Because they had played FNR a few times by that time.
Yeah, 3-4 times.
Yeah.
And so I took the job and left and... We went to the States and then I met all these people, like yourself, and I met Jay, I met Albini, I met Saccharine Trust, I met, Joel Spencer. I met
I heard a lot of things. Because, look, one of the reasons Sonic Youth was doing 3-4 times, you saw them there. They're doing their first tours in Europe. I think the European gig situation was a little more dependable. The U.S. tour thing was being built by Dukowski in his phone book, right? Yeah. I mean, the rock and roll scene was so against punk, we actually had to build it, and it was a little tougher. And so there was a lot of you adjusting from the European tour scene to the U.S. tour scene, which was not together. No, it was still being made, you know? Playing youth centers, maybe England was a little like our scene, but the continent was very much dependable and together.
Yeah, because a lot of it was subsidized.
By government.
Like, yeah, it was like government-run youth places. Like, you know, you get your youth entertainment.
U.S. was...
And then going to the U.S. and, like, you know, things like you play bars. I run my
people. That's why I was saying that's kind of like England was, too.
Yeah, and they didn't care at all about who you were as long as you brought in people.
That's they care about.
And if you didn't bring in people, even if there was a contract, you didn't pay. You know, they sort of ripped you off. And it was like, you know, some nights it was like young kids who weren't too over-enthusiastic and didn't have the money at the end of the night. That's bad, you know, it's bad news, but most of the time it was like, you know, bar owners.
They were just creepy.
They were, like, ugly.
Yeah. So, but you had to roll with it.
It was an awesome experience. You know, like, after having been in that, like, very comfortable European situation, all of a sudden, this kind of things, it was...
And we already had years of it and stuff.
Yeah.
But you know what? It had to go through that to be built. Just had to.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't there. And Black Flag doesn't get the credit they should, man. They really... These cats were doing 4 months straight tours to build this crap. Uh-huh. And then bands touring these days, in the 2000s, they don't realize what really comes
from. If I tell my stories to people, even... If they're 10, 15 years younger than we are, they thought, wow, did you sleep on people's floors? You know, did you do that?
I still do that.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, this thing with the club situation, you did not know what you were rolling into.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. People pretend, there'd be situations where people pretend there never was a gig. Yeah. You're at the guy's house, knocking on the door, and he's talking through the door. What do you mean? What do you mean? But he said, you know.
But you know, you did your thing from a phone booth. You could
There was no internet too.
You couldn't disappear for days, and nobody was knowing where you were and how things were rolling.
It was all about phone calls.
Yeah.
It was all about people. Actually, the nightmares were overwhelmed by the good thing. If the nightmares would have been bigger than the good things, it would have died. Mm-hmm. So. For every nightmare, there was a lot of good people working for each other, putting out the fanzines, their band would be opening, you can't get their pad. There was a lot, because it would have never grown, it would have died.
And some of those people sort of stayed in the business and became successful.
Absolutely. And so, in fact, some of those cats are still my promoters after all these years. Yeah. And you count on them. They keep the scene going through all the ups and downs. Now, between that, FNAR doing Sonics. Then you go on to...
First it was called W, and then it became Mojo. It was like...
Booking agents.
You know, booking agents, and for Holland. And you first booked tours in Holland, and then when it got a little bit bigger, you started promoting shows in Holland, and all over Holland.
Or you'd find promoters in other lands.
No. You know, I did it... There was two
parts of my job. That was on your side, right?
Yeah, I did, like... I had my friends, and...
It's really important, though. Even though it's on the side stuff, I think that was really important.
That was a real cool thing for me to have, because in 86, I met all these people, and all these people, you know, didn't have that much connections in Europe. And I said, okay, you know, here's my phone number, give me a call when you want to come. And then I built my little network outside of, you know, Holland. I went to Germany, Belgium. Those were the first territories. Then Austria, Switzerland. Yeah, all of a sudden, there's someone in Italy, you know, and it grows and grows. And it's... You know, that's how I sort of build my own thing.
I know, but people ain't aware of that. You know, they either take it for granted or they just don't know how that had to be grown.
It's in a way, it's the same as what happened in the States. Because I think in Holland, things were subsidized. and maybe partly in Germany, but there was plenty of territories where all that, you know, you could get one gig in Italy at the most.
Oh, yeah.
Or in Spain, you know, there's anyone you call is like, sorry. And France, like Paris, like, you know, you...
God, Italy was still into discos.
Yeah, but
I
also,
mean,
like...
so much different then.
But also France, which...
France, it was non-existent.
No.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then you get someone to...
Very underdeveloped, we might yeah. say.
But it's, you know, it's a lot of pushing and pulling, and then you running into the right people. This is like, you know, that the business, this business is all about people. It's like,
it is. It was in the old days, it is now.
It's still now, you know.
Yeah.
If you know and you sort of are friendly and you sort of try to work together on something, you can get a long way.
So W Mojo, you worked that for how many years?
15 years.
Right.
I started like mid-80s, and I left in 99 when they got sold to
Clear Channel People.
Clear Channel People.
Which are called Live
Nation these days, yeah. And they're all over.
Right.
And, you know, it was really cool to see the company growing. And it was, you know, when I started, it was like we were 6 people. And then we ended up like being 100 people. And more and more they asked me to be a manager, to be like, I mean, an office manager, like running a company. And I didn't feel like that, you know. It's not my thing, it's not me, you know. I'm like the networking guy, talking to people about music and setting up gigs and helping my friends or, you know, or whoever, making little steps and running a company by, you know, hiring, firing and whatever people. It's not me. And being smart about business, and, you know, I'm smart about my own thing, but I'm not that good in running a company.
Yeah, like all of us can't be on bass. Somebody's got to be lead guitar.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it was an interesting...
And especially when it got hooked up with the Clear Channel,
I
can see that.
Straight before that.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
was... But I...
You
know,
can see it coming, right?
You know, at some point...
It wasn't a coincidence.
No, but, of course not. But, you know, it's sort of all through the 90s, I got to work with the big business in London, and I did pretty big shows, you know, Beasties, Chili Peppers, you know.
There was a kind of mentality, am I wrong about this, but a U.S. band had to get an England agent.
Yeah.
Right? You want an agent from the continent, right?
Yeah. And still more or less
is it
the same
still?
Thing.
Yeah. I think you kind of helped change that a little.
No, you know, there's definitely a bunch of people like myself who, how you know, are living on the continent and working for American, but act from anywhere. But still, London is somehow considered as being the nucleus of European music business.
And maybe it was more intense though in the older days.
No, it's still intense. You know,
because Henry for the Stooges, you know, he does this from Poland now. He said you couldn't really do that in the older days. Maybe.
But is he booking the Stooges from Poland? Is Stooges?
No, there's a man who books us in England. Yeah.
What was his
Mr.
name?
Mr. Giddens.
Yeah, John Giddens. Yeah. So he's a powerful man because he does huge acts.
Yeah.
Okay, let's not get into this, but I know, you know, and he's a nice man. And there's like this whole generation, it's like all generations, you know, it's like...
That's what I said.
There's a generation...
Who is this cat who booked Flag?
Paul Boswell.
Paul Boswell.
And he's our generation.
That's right.
And I still talk to him, you know, and somehow you always feel your generation is nicer than the new generation before you, because the generation before us are all like... 60, 65 by now.
Yeah.
And they're all like, you know, they've made tons of money. And they were all like the people who started it in the late 60s, early 70s. And we were the people who started doing our stuff in the late 70s, early
80s. Who's the other Dutch people, Paperclip? What are they doing now?
I think they made their company a little smaller and they still do stuff.
They still do tours. Yeah. All right.
But it's, you know, it's marginal. You know, in a way... I never try to be too clever. I try to be, you know, I try to be making friends and trying to make my network work. And I think there's been people who got a little overambitious.
Yeah.
And when they are overambitious, they sort of try to be more businessmen and, you know, partners.
Dream too big for a tent.
I don't know. But, you know, And that sort of, my experience is that never gets you anywhere. I try to fight myself into a certain situation. It never worked. You better can be polite. You can better be like, give and take. Right. And not trying to get the whole thing yourself.
Yeah, because it's kind of long term.
Yeah, but I don't think about it as being long term. It's more like...
But you know what? It ends up being a long term kind of thinking. The other time is either hit or miss, it seems.
Yeah.
But so you leave those cats in 99, but you still do bands. But now, small...
I stick to my friends. Yeah. And it's Sonic Youth. I've been working with Cat Power for more than 10 years now.
Yeah.
Yourself, like, more than 20 years.
Yeah.
When Steve Albini needs me, I'm there.
Yeah.
And, there's one or two more people who come and go, and I enjoy it. And I'm a one-man operation, and I can take jobs on the side. It's like, for instance, the Rotterdam Film Festival needed someone to do a music program last year. I'm here. And there's a really cool venue in Rotterdam called Worm, and I'm at their board, and there's like, I'm 54, so people think I know something. So then it is a little bit of advice or,
I'm
there.
It's the
and sometimes it's paid, it's sometimes it's not as not paid, but it's like...
Payment maybe is not always in coin.
No.
That's what I've found over the years.
No, and it's, it's my network, the people I got to know through all these years.
A lot of times stuff will come around even though there's not a coin.
Yeah.
This is what I found. It's hard for people to believe because things seem so cutthroat.
It is.
If you're in this long term, things can come back around.
Yeah. And in a nice way.
Big time.
Yeah.
Great. Let's play some more music.
I feel your eyes upon me. How should I activate? To feel so unsure always. Give up for now, keep on this way. That's what she said. I could run, but I stand and read it. Boredom won't stop as long as I feed it. The world drifts down like gravy. The thoughts of love so hazy. Everyone's ideal of fun. Thank you.
I saw her first on an April morn, as she walked through the mist in a field of hay. Her hair lit the world with its golden glow, and the smile on her face burned my heart away. Alberta, let your hair hang low. Alberta, let your hair hang low. I'll give you more gold than your apron can hold, if you'll only let your hair hang low. I thought my golden time would last, but the field of hay was soon cut down. In a short few weeks it all was past, and my golden girl just a pain. Alberta, what song you're mine. Alberta, what's on your mind? My heart is so sad, 'cause you treat me so bad. Alberta, what's on your mind? Alberta, let your head hang low.
We
are walking in the evening by the ocean. We are splashing naked in the water, and the sky is red from off towards New Orleans.
baby, think I'm losing my mind. Cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded, far from home. Alright. I'm riding on a midnight train. But everybody feels me the same. The subway light is not a reflection. I'm on a bit of final direction. And I'm stranded on my own. Stranded, far from home. Alright. Stranded, I'm so far from home. Stranded, yeah, I'm on my own. Stranded, you gotta leave me alone. Cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded, far from home. Come on. Does a man turn out you? Say the man thing I can't do. You're like a mind stuck in the world. Your honey's such a stupid girl. Now I'm stranded on my own. Stranded, far from home. But come on.
We just heard I'm Stranded by the Saints, written by Ed Cooper, someone I really love and worked with a lot. And before that was Harry Nilsson, 1941. Before that was Smell Maps with Read About Seymour, with that included the Epic Soundtrack and Nikki Sudden, who both are not with us anymore.
Oh,
and then,
fortunate. What about Harry Nilsson?
Harry Nilsson is like, I just got that album somewhere in the 70s. And it was, with all the arrangements, it was like a very mysterious album for me.
Right.
It was different from, you know, Hendrix or all that kind of stuff I was listening to at that time. And
we've got to warn people, too, there was a compilation made of
those
two records. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for the originals.
Okay. And he's a very interesting person, especially the first four or five albums.
Maybe a buddy of John Lennon's.
And Ringo Starr, and Keith Moon.
And Keith Moon.
He's in the Keith Moon books.
Do you know about him and John Lennon at the Troubadour?
Yeah,
and those glasses. They found the glasses.
Really?
And they went on auction or something.
And the glasses who...
that got knocked off of John Lennon. He was wearing it.
Yeah. Wow. I've seen the picture.
Okay.
And
they were heckling the Smothers Brothers.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're on this show.
Okay. That's, I'm here to learn.
Yeah.
And before that was Jesse Winchester with the call called Biloxi. And before that was Southbound by Doc Watson and Repulsion by Dinosaur Jr.
That's what we started with.
And they were called Dinosaur at that time.
That's right.
So,
I still find it hard
to
call them that. It was something to do with some people
West Coast.
The Grateful Dead people, I think were trying to tour.
Jefferson Airplane.
Jefferson Airplane people? Yeah. Okay. Somebody.
It was sad. You know, and they were...
Jay had to change the name. It's terrible.
And even, you know, on the album, it was first called Dinosaur.
Of course.
But then it was like... The next editions was Dinosaur Jr.
Yeah, terrible. Well, we're at the end of the second hour of the September 1st, 2008 Watt from Pedro show. Hold tight for hour three. September 1st, 2008 Watt from Pedro show here in Amsterdam, Netherlands, on tour with Stooges. I play in Rotterdam tomorrow, and then the next day we fly to Paris to do the Stooges do some gig for Converse Shoe People. I don't know what that's all about, but right after the gig we'll fly off to Belgrade and do a gig there in Serbia, and then the next day I should be home Saturday in Pedro, and I'm home 5 days, and then I fly off again to do the last leg of Stooges touring for 2008, and it's going to be, I think,
it's all Europe.
22 days, yeah.
You're not doing any Stooges gig in the States?
We already did some last leg. There was Camden, New Jersey, Baltimore, Maryland, and New York, New York. Yeah, the Stooges haven't played a lot in the U.S.
Because of the strong Euro, it's more attractive to...
Euro has a summer tradition of festivals. The U.S. is starting to pick up on this.
Yeah. I noticed there's quite a few festivals in the States.
More.
Yeah.
Used to be none. There used to be some traveling things.
Yeah.
Huh? But the only traveling one now is Warped Tour.
Mm-hmm. That still exists, yeah?
It's the longest running one. I just did 3 gigs on the old school stage.
Yeah?
Yeah, some of the, I saw Lee Ving and Pat Smear and...
I think you saw... You sent out
these guys were like 30 years... Yeah, but I don't think these kids, listeners, saw them. That's my little flow list. But some of these cats have had bands 30 years.
Yeah, I know.
So you have people coming to the gigs bringing their kids...
Mm-hmm.
We saw you, saw me playing as a young punk rocker. Now they're bringing their kids. And I remember being a young punk rocker and the police having such a time seeing that our music was dangerous to children.
Yeah.
There was a support group, I've talked about this on the show before, but there was this thing in Orange County called Parents of Punkers where they could come together and help each other out, you know, because they had this common problem that their children were punks and what was going to happen. And now you got parents bringing, because they were punk rockers, they're bringing their kids.
Uh-huh.
It's so bizarre.
But how
people get uptight.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I saw people from on the Norwegian festival, family, coming to see Sonic Youth, and the dad had a Sonic Youth t-shirt. That was kind of a lot to see. But that, you know, that happens.
Time marches on. But all these weird-ass fears that authority figures have about watching out for people, especially in aesthetics and arts, they should let it go, I think. Speaking of Sonic Youth, like you did those early tours with them, and then there's a period where no tours, and then you come back. So you've seen Sonics through the years.
Yeah.
How would you say their bands change?
You know, it's pretty hard for me to really... You see changes in a way that the level of shows is more even. In the old days, there were shows which were really not coming together, falling apart all the time. Nowadays, they can do good shows. And for a while, it was like, I think it was like a bit part of the 90s, mid-90s, that it was like a little bit of a routine. And there wasn't enough challenge for them to be, you know, to be interested enough to be in a rock band. But I think these days they have so many things on the side. They always had some of that. But now it's like everybody's feeling more happy about it.
Yeah, Thurston made a solo record.
Thurston made a solo, but he made a bunch of solo records.
Second one now. Well, this is like, this one's closer, I think, to that Psychic Heart one from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
He had me write the solo notes for those, lighter notes for those, or some kind of piece on it. And I thought
Psychic
about
Heart.
It. Yeah, and it was like, did you get that? I looked at it like, whoa, since he's the bass player on all the songs, I'm going to analyze each song by the way the bass is.
Yeah.
And then he's got this new one about the trees, mm-hmm. the academy.
Yeah.
But something interesting you told me today that I didn't know about was Lee, because Lee wrote me and he said, hey, I'm on this boat with my family on a river in France.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was more like a vacation, but you tell me he's actually doing...
Yeah, he's doing arts. He's always been working in drawing and painting and printing. And this place in Paris has a museum connected to it and a print shop. And so they make designs and have it printed. And they use all kinds of techniques, and it makes beautiful stuff.
They've got a couple of these things. I gave them... They asked me for some pictures of my sunrises.
Yeah.
And that was in a museum?
There's been a long talk about having a Sonic Youth museum show. Because Sonic Youth has all these connections into the so-called real art world. And, you know, from Gerhard Richter to Raymond to, you know, tons of people have made great cover art for them. But also, you know, there's been all these... at France, and Kim did Kim's Bedroom a couple of years ago in Eindhoven, and now sort of they decided to bring it all together, and there was a museum in Saint-Nazaire in the west of France who was putting up the money, and it's an amazing place.
It's like them curating.
It's sort of, yeah, them curating, but also bringing together all the collections they have, and also some of their own stuff. Each of them, except for Steve, but Kim makes drawings and paintings.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
she had an art show in New York City, in fact.
And Thurston has these collages he makes. And Lee makes videos together with his wife.
Right, Peter. Right.
And they bring that kind of stuff in, but also...
What's that called? Light and Sound? They got a name for that, where she shows the slides.
Yeah, it's called... it's one word. It escaped me. It will come back at some point. Terrible. Sorry.
I know, too. Light and Sound or something?
No. It's one word.
Yeah, but I mean, but it's put together.
Let's move on, because okay. I'm not sure. I can't think about it right now. But it's...
Well, they asked me for some sunrise.
Yeah, but that's for the catalog, I guess.
No, they said it was put up in the thing.
Okay.
They went and printed those up.
I don't, you know, I saw the show, but it's still a little bit of a work in progress.
Okay.
So I think still some stuff needs to be added, because it's going to be traveling. It's going to be going from San Jose, it's going to Bolzano, and from there it's going to go to somewhere in Germany.
Oh.
So it's a, but I want to say something more about the place in San Jose. It's like a shelter for submarines. The Germans made shelters for submarines, like bunkers, and they're huge.
They can't destroy them.
They can't destroy them. They had been sitting there for like 60 years, and nobody knew what to do with them. And now they sort of developing them into, you know, one of them is an art space, and they have a venue in there. But there's like six more of those huge spaces, and you know they're filling them up bit by bit. And Saint-Nazaire itself was like totally gone by the end of the war. Yeah. Only this huge structure was still there.
I think they're called pans. Somebody told me they're called pens.
I don't know if there's a name to it, but it's
like a pig pen.
Yeah.
Sub pen. I heard about them. Ronnie knows all about them, of course.
Yeah. And now there's some. The next show is in Bolzano in the museum.
Yeah. And so they take the whole collection.
Yeah. And it's a real museum. But the Bolzano museum is kind of in the news right now, because there's a Kippenberg exhibition. And Kippenberg had made like a tiny cross
frog.
With a frog.
And the Pope says, get this away.
Yeah, and that's in the museum.
And the courts are saying, no, you be autonomous. The art's got to be separate from
it. And there's like, I think the main governor of the town or that province went on hunger strike and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so they made a compromise. They moved it from the entrance to the third floor.
I think the frog is holding a beer. He's holding a couple
of things. I saw a picture. I'm not sure if it's... I don't think it's in this one, but it's pretty funny to see what it's all about.
Yeah, like Giuliani didn't dig the piss Christ.
I don't know.
People get upset with it. If you don't like it, don't go.
Yeah.
No, it's that easy.
But it's, in a way, it's cool that art can still, like...
be provocative, yeah. Yeah.
Like
now they got this other thing coming, you know about this? This is box set that's audio, and they've asked me for a poem and some songs. I gave them a Foot of Noise song. It's music, and it's literature is a book. And this thing comes out, It's not.
Oh, but that's the catalog, which is with the.
No, no, this is in a whole other project.
Are you sure?
Yeah, he leaves and says he gets confused. Yeah, this thing is called. I don't know, some kind of Sonic Youth project, though.
Okay.
Different than this
okay.
show. This is a thing that's sound and books.
And but it's you know, it's that keeps them focused. That and I think it's a more happy bunch than 10 years ago.
Than just the rock band.
Yeah. And you know, it's sometimes
Steve's got this label.
Steve got this label.
It's a little scaled back from what it was,
yeah.
But still. He was very ambitious a little bit there.
Yeah.
But still, I like that. His
he had Lee Hazelwood, but he had like a Cat Power started on, and they had
that's right.
A Sabino record, I think.
That's
and
right.
Like a Blonde Red Hat, and you know.
He's also involved with the Maxwell Club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's part of that. Yeah. So they're doing well, and I saw a week of shows this summer, and they were all great. And one of the shows I remember seeing them in San Jose, where the exhibition is like in front of 5,000 people on a festival, which was mainly like world music. And so I'm sure half of the people had no clue what Sonic Youth was about. And they did it, you know, like all the audience was like...
World music, like Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and like 5 years ago, they wouldn't be able to pull that, or 10 years ago, I'm not saying, shouldn't say 5 years ago, but 10 years ago, it would have been more difficult. They wouldn't have, you know, if the vibe from the audience is not there right away, they would, you know, their focus would have not been there. I thought they were really good, and they did like Daydream Nation last year.
Right, right.
Which was kind of an odd thing to do, but...
Yeah, I think Thurston said it wasn't his idea.
It wasn't. No, it's true. But, you know, the weird thing was that they sort of got pushed into that corner. Barry.
Oh, it was Barry's idea.
He sort of wanted them to do
it. He did the Stooges do it.
Yeah. And so they ended up doing it. And I saw the first show. And that was like Primavera in Barcelona. You've been there. And it was a very, like, it was playing the album with, like, a real 80s feeling to it. And I thought, you know... It was weird for me to see that, but then
yeah.
I saw it like 2 months later when they did it, you know, I saw it a bunch of times. But then at the end of the run of dates I saw, it was like a modern album. It was like the whole 80s feeling was gone. It was like the layers of music which they have nowadays, even playing the same material, it was far more interesting by the end of the tour than at the beginning of the tour. You know,
covering, really.
Yeah. But then you sort of, and not like by like adding some instruments, but it was like, you know.
Just playing your instruments different.
Yeah, a little different.
Yeah. No, I can imagine. I can imagine.
It was
when I saw them, I played with them, in fact, it was a year ago in Ireland. It was September 2nd, so it was tomorrow. It was this thing called Electric Picnic.
Yeah. I was there.
Yeah, you were there. But they didn't do the Daydream thing.
No.
They were really good, though.
Yeah.
They were on fire.
That's pretty
great.
It's great to have me.
That's where Kim asked me about getting a bass, so I gave her my blue one. Mm-hmm. And then when this one got stolen in Montreal, she said, look, you want this one back? And I said, nah, man. Right? If you give something to somebody, you don't take it back. And then that cat, this man named Andy, comes and brings me a bass.
Yeah. That's cool.
That's why I said, sometimes you just wait. I know that's optimistic thinking, but
things, you know.
I just thought it would be jive to take that bass back after I gave it to her. They are a resilient band.
But they're amazing. Really cool people, and they're like...
Yeah, I mean, that's why.
That's a really big part of it, and they're, you know, it's always fun to be with them in you know, being in a van with them. It's really like, and that's, there's always humor, there's always like, no, I remember like working at the FNR very early on.
Yeah.
We had people doing production, like the technical guys, and we were putting on weird stuff there. And the technical guys, you know, they didn't get it. But when Sonic Youth came, they sort of loved it because they had sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, so like, if you have Einstürzende Neubauten and you don't like the music, it's not fun to work a whole night with those people. But you know, with Sonic Youth, even if you don't like the music that much, it's even, you know, on stage, off stage, it's real people you know.
A vibe, yeah. No attitude and elitist separation.
Yeah, but it's, yeah, like, that's part of it. But it's, you know, real human stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that stuff translates.
Yeah.
And hopefully transcends. Here, let's play some more music.
Yeah. darling, not to me. They are saying you will never be free. Long as you hear me. Plain old queen, the self-forsaker. White, black, bright, obscene and tragic. Here we go again, feel the magic. Your turn to dust, I know because I'll be thinking of you. In this cold city, the silence and you hiding down the nearest narrow siding. I hear the sirens calling out to me. They are saying you will never be free. Long as you hear me. Long as you hear me. Long as you hear me.
So Mike, you handed me a list of
bands that we just played.
Played, and it's like I go from back to, you know, the last one to the first one. And the last song you heard was "Wow" by K.O. Co. Plus the Knockouts. And I hear before that was the Dirt Bombs with I hear the Sirens.
Now you know about them.
Yeah,
you were talking about the Vera.
Yeah, they're you know, the Vera Club in Groningen.
Is it still Peter?
It's still Peter.
Yeah.
He's must have had his 30th anniversary there. And, you know, he's still the king there. And I read the Vera Krant, the Vera newspaper.
Yeah.
I get it every 2 weeks, and I read it from you know, all the way through. And yeah, it's all, you know, the Dirt Bumps is one of their favorites, their heroes.
They go way back. They've been having bands so long.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Doors before that.
Right.
So before the Dirt Bumps, you heard Telepathic Friend with a song called, I'm not sure if I pronounce this right, but Or maybe. And before that was Bully Pulpit with a song called Skybox Baby Maker. And jumping from Dutch to German is not a long jump. It's
wow.
The band before
I don't hear many Dutch people say that.
The band before that was like Spiele und Brot. Und their song was called Ich bin ich, I am I. And before that was China Smoke with Foreign Spices. And then there's a really difficult one for me. Before that is Yuki Kawana with, and then, you know, you totally got me here with Midokite Toko ni Tuko or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, can you do it? What the first song is called?
Midokite.
Okay, you try.
Maybe.
Toko ni
Tuko. Yeah, but it's very difficult. Now, Jim O'Rourke could probably help us.
Yeah, he's good at it.
Hey, right now in Holland, who do you like that's playing, that's a Dutch band?
Wow, you got me here. Just before I came here, yesterday and the day before, I've been playing a record by a guy called Lucky Fons. He's a very talented guy. He makes his own records. And
town?
I think you're all from Amsterdam, so okay. He's living in this town. I like him a lot.
But not everybody's from Amsterdam.
What is it? Nobody is from Amsterdam, you know, like New York.
Right, they go there to get things happening.
Yeah, like you got to know Lisbeth, who is Solex.
Right, right.
Who
right.
used to be on Matador, and she's still going strong and making records with people. She's
on a tour right now.
Yeah, with the boat.
Netherlands, playing a song in every province.
Yeah. And she just finished recording with John Spencer, and
she said he was improvising and sampling him to create. Yeah,
that's her thing.
That's great.
You know, she steals music from other people and then makes it into pop songs, and she's really good at it. You know, quite a few people might have heard her work. She's
Solex.
Yeah, she has toured in the States like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I found out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of ignorant. We have a lot of common friends
mm-hmm.
making music. The Miku people.
Yeah, she's really, really good and a very nice person. That's very important.
Yeah, a few days ago I found out from Sam she's on a Go team.
Yeah?
I don't know. I'm sometimes out of time. I'm the last to know. Yeah. But I was, you're the one that put that together.
Mm-hmm.
And she made up 40 samples for me and I played all that bass.
Yeah.
It was maybe 8 or 9 hours. You know,
yeah.
It was fun. I was pants shit at first. I was afraid. But then...
And she loves working. She's one of those people who never complains.
Yeah,
she's
I like that.
Very focused.
Combate. No whining. No belly aching. You get too much of that, man. It drives me away. Yeah. I don't even want to hear about it. No.
No.
You want to hear people really whine, have nothing to do.
Yeah.
No projects.
Life's too beautiful.
Yeah, isn't it weird about us humans? We lose our perspective.
Yeah.
Like, I love pedaling, you know? So, I was in England last week to do Get Loaded in the Park and TV taping. Something called From the Basement or something? Neil Gunn?
Yeah. That's a really cool thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
I climbed a bass so bad on it. Yeah. Oh my God, I could have strangled myself.
Like, they have like a totally high-end situation with very good filming equipment and very good...
It gave me kind of a tiny... I don't know. Ig yelled bass solo. He usually yells my name and it threw me. I don't know. It's kind of good though. I asked her, what do you do when you clam like that bad? And especially TV where it's going to be cut. Actually, we did 12 songs. We're going to use half of them. So maybe...
I thought they did very short sessions.
Yeah, but he said, like, to do it.
Yeah.
He said, let's go like a prac. Let's do as many songs as we can. They'll pick what they want out. They had me have a really small, really neat amp from the 60s, mm-hmm. Ampeg B15. I couldn't really hear it. It was a hard gig. Scotty had to hold back on the drums because...
It's a small room you do it in?
No, it's kind of a big room, like you were saying, a high-endy...
Yeah.
But you know, the people, the England cats shooting us, very easy to work with.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, no attitude, no
belief. Did you meet Nigel?
No, it was just us playing.
Okay.
And I think he comes in later and he mixes it and stuff. And
yeah, that's his thing.
They told us he's very involved with it. Yeah. A lady named Astrid was a producer.
It's like a modern version.
But nobody was. Sometimes television, they're very heavy-handed on what's to be done, and these people aren't like this at all. And they kind of ran it as a prac, but then he got into it. And
He was
great. But I did this clam, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't get out of key, but I lost all the phrases, and my mind went, I couldn't believe it. But I went riding a bike.
Mm-hmm.
I never rode a bike in the streets of London before. And
neither have I.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you got a bike, and it was scary. But you know what? I'm still glad I did it. So, 3 hours one day, which was a holiday. It turned out to be more intense the next day, so it's 2.5 hours. But I'm glad I did. But it's kind of scary. There's not bike paths, and there's...
Mm-hmm.
You got a bike thing coming.
Yeah, but Lee Ronaldo came over to my house 2 weeks ago, and we went to ride a bike, and we did some really great rides around the area where I grew up, and it was really beautiful.
In Zealand.
Yeah. But now I'm.
Is there a bike pass down there?
It's very easy to
less traffic.
Yeah, and then whenever the roads are a little crowded with cars, there's a bike path.
Yeah.
So it's very,
see, London ain't got that. Them to pedal, but it ain't set up yet. And it would help the town. Less congestion, less pollution. Right. They're really getting that going. But see, they haven't got the towns together that way.
No.
Dutch way ahead.
No, it's also a matter of politics. And it's like, if you make it into a priority. Like, Paris didn't have that until 10 years ago, until 5 years ago.
And there's bikes, now they're available.
It's something.
Guys, there's something about this.
And you know, there's more towns in France and in Spain where they have the same kind of system.
There was a German town, Munster had it.
Yeah.
Munster had it happening pretty good. Maybe if you got less hills. But there's got to be a solution to this congestion.
Yeah.
You know, the England that way was you pay a fine with your cars. That doesn't really do it.
No, but you know, the life cuts on two ways, because it exercise for people.
Oh, absolutely.
So the overweight thing and the health thing
makes
people
healthier, right?
You know.
Now, what are you doing next week?
I'm going to ride all the way through France, from north to south.
Wow.
And I'm doing...
I went from Barcelona to Le Havre, so I went through north-south.
I know. I remember that trip. But I got hooked up with a couple of guys who are all, like, in their early 60s, and they have a rowing background. So rowing is one of those sports which makes you very physically, like...
Stamina.
Really, really intense. So, and then we're going to go from north to south of France at like 100 miles a day in a week time. So, all through the Alps.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy, but you know, I like that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. You've been pedaling a while.
I grew up that way, you know.
And ice skating.
And ice skate, big time. Yeah, like my dad was an ice skater, and therefore, you know, that became like an obsession for me too. And while my rock and roll years, my more heavy rock and roll years, I was sort of not doing it.
It was on ice.
But then, you know,
I figure speech, when we say something's on ice, it's like,
put it
on the back burner.
And then early, you know, late 1900s, no.
Yeah.
No, like 2000s. I started picking up on it again.
I ain't that old.
No. Sorry, my English is sort of fading away.
No, it's good.
But you know, that's another thing I love doing. But winters in Holland aren't that strong anymore, for whatever reason.
Yeah, right.
And so for a bunch of years I went to Austria in the mountains to have a lake, and then they put out, I forgot the name as well, shit.
They found Iceman.
I think that's where it is, And there,
I think I know where you're talking.
There's a whole lake where they put a track of 25 kilometers, and then it's like
that's
thousands
a big
of
track.
Fish. But they do it like 8 times. So you do like 200 kilometers on a Austrian lake. Yeah. Takes you a whole day. It's fun. You know, but that's the typical third Dutch thing. If you look at the paintings, you
the
see
the Bosch paintings.
They have people skating.
Well, kind of people, kind of creatures.
Yeah, true, but you know, it was there. It was there before biking.
Yeah.
People haven't seen
the. They look like wood skates.
I think they did use bones.
A blade, bones?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wood is not, you know, it gets soft when there's wetness.
Okay,
and bones are,
yeah.
Before stiff. It was metal, it strong. Was bones.
Okay. The runners. You got some music we're going to play.
Okay.
Your last rap. Here we go.
Baby, get the step. Marique, Marique, je t'aimais tant. Entre les tours de Bruges et Caen. Aïe, Marique, Marique, il y a longtemps. Entre les tours de Bruges et Caen. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, wide wind, de stomme wind. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, wind de zee, de grijze zee. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, leidt het licht, het donker licht. En schuurt het dan over mijn land, mijn platteland, mijn Vlaanderen land. Ai, Marieke, Marieke, le ciel flamand, couleur des tours, de Bruges et Caen. Aïe, Marieke, Marieke, le ciel flamand, pleure avec moi, de Bruges à Caen. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, wijde wind, de stomme wind. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, wind, de zee, de grijze zee. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, leidt het licht, het donker licht. En schuurt het dan over mijn land, mijn platteland, mijn Vlaanderen land. Ai, Marieke, Marieke, le ciel flamand, pesait-il trop de Bruges à Caen. Aïe, Marieke, Marieke, sur tes 20 ans, que j'aimais tant, de Bruges à Caen. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, lacht de duivel, de zwarte duivel. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, brandt mijn hart, mijn oude hart. Zonder liefde, warme liefde, steekt de zomer, de droge zomer. En scheurt de zand over mijn land, mijn platteland, mijn Vlaanderen land. Aïe, Marieke, Marieke, reviens le temps, de Bruges et Caen. Aïe, Marieke, Marieke, reviens le temps où tu m'aimais, de Bruges à Caen. Aïe, Marieke, Marieke, le soir souvent, entre les tours, de Bruges et Caen. Aïe, Marieke, Marieke, tous les étangs m'ouvrent leurs bras, de Bruges à Caen.
Thank you.
The last song we just heard was Cat Power with I Don't Blame You. Cat Power is a lady I'm very proud of working with, and she's doing really well. I've been working with her for the last 10 or maybe more years, and it's an honor, and it's a pleasure too. The song before that is Jacques Brel, someone you might not be familiar with, but it's one of my heroes. He's from he originally is from Belgium, but then moved to France, became a star in France, and still some of his songs are in Flemish, but this one is half Flemish, half French, and it's called Marieke. And before that was The Meters, I Just Kissed My Baby, and it's mainly because it's on a New Orleans compilation, a town which is it's much in trouble in the next coming days. So
yeah, Gustav is heading towards her.
Yeah.
And all my music friends there, you probably got out of town. I've got emails from some of them.
Okay.
But hopefully there's a town to come back to.
Yeah.
You know,
it's scary.
Yeah, very
scary. You know, Holland had a flood in the 1950s, in the year before I was born in 1953, and it flooded a big part of Zeeland, where I come from. Mm. And close to 2,000 people got killed in one night. And because of that, they built a delta work, as we call it. It was like they hired the dikes and put little, huge, smart kind of dams all around that area, and has saved us from any flooding since then. But it was, and it got the Dutch a lot of expertise, which the people in New Orleans called in. No, but they called
in. They did.
Yeah, when after Katrina, they sort of, like, people from New Orleans came to Zeeland to see how the Dutch people and the Zeeland people solved their water issues, because Holland is big part
below sea
below
level.
Sea level.
That's why it's the lowland.
Lowlands. That's how we started. Yeah. So,
Carlos, thank you so much for being on the show.
It was
in your land. And it's great.
Yeah,
it's right. Just having you aboard and playing all that music and turning people on to your music history and stories. And you're still in music. You have not become jaded, and you still dig it. And that's
tomorrow, Stooges.
Tomorrow,
in my town,
at the club called Watt.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Okay, everybody, this is September 1st, 2008 edition Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.